This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
After the World Cup break, the Clarets picked up where they left off with a comfortable 3-0 win over mediocre Championship opposition. This is the No Nay Never podcast. No Nay Never podcast. Good evening and welcome to the No Nay Never podcast. You'll have noticed that I'm not Natalie Bromley. She can't be with us today. Feeling a bit under the weather. I think with this unconfirmed report that it might be a severe case of promotion fever, but we'll come on to that in a bit. So I'm joined by the erudite Richard Steele, fresh from a trip to Loftus Road, which saw the Clarets claim another great 3 points. How are we doing, Rich? You all right?
Yeah, very good, Tom. And yourself?
Yes, very well, thank you. Sort of getting back into putting my Championship head back on now, the World Cup.
Yeah.
I found it quite hard to think about watching England in a World Cup quarterfinal and then watching Burnley play QPR in a league game. But I think in terms of that, England getting knocked out has made it a bit easier to transition. So, yeah, I'm back in the groove now after that performance on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it was almost a strange feeling at Loftus Road. It was a game I was really looking forward to. It was a new ground for me. And there's only two I've not done in the Championship now, Luton and Cardiff. So hopefully get to Luton this season. You could almost tell there was a little bit of a hangover from the World Cup, obviously just being the evening before. You know, England playing well, getting knocked out, disappointedly, came missing that pen, a lot of what-ifs, especially at 12:30 kickoff, 1 o'clock kickoff, sorry. So, yeah, a little bit cold, but yeah, the Clarets definitely warmed the old cockles up and, you know, romped to a pretty comfortable victory in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of warming up then, before we got into the swing of things, there was 15 seconds on the clock when the most sort of notable refereeing incident perhaps of the game occurred. A winger, I think his name was Thomas, so I'm not familiar with him, apologies to Thomas, but he skipped round Muric and went down, no penalty given. What was your thoughts on that? The initial viewing in the away end and then perhaps...
Oh yeah, well from where we were sat, where we were sat in the away end, we was on the second to the back row and you're already in the upper tier, so we had a fantastic view of it, unlike maybe some other people at QPR with a restricted view. But to me, I was just expecting the keeper to point to the spot. I think we was in a situation where, I'm glad there's no VAR in the Championship for numerous reasons. But on that occasion, I was very glad because even as comfortable as the game was, if QPR get an early goal and get the crowd up, you know, it does change the game, especially after not playing for so long. I think it's one of them where we know Muric, I think he's getting better and better, but he still can make rash decisions, comes off his line sometimes and gets caught. And he's just took him out. I said, there's no point trying to defend it, really. It is a penalty. And we got away with one. And yeah, there's not much else you can say, really, is there? But yeah, I think we definitely got away with one there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the guy's clever. Like, you can see Muric is coming. He's knocked it round him and he's waiting for the contact. And like you say, Muric is a bit similar to the Wigan penalty that gave away, just a bit too rash and coming out when he doesn't really need to. And I think that's maybe why the ref didn't give it, because the touch to take it away from Muric was so heavy. But yeah, we definitely got away with one there. And then that moves us on nicely. Then, as you say, from there we were looking quite comfortable. Teller could have scored, you know, 20 seconds. But we're stroking the ball around, keeping it. And then we break the deadlock with perhaps what was another contentious refereeing decision. Again, be good to get your view from the away end, first of all. And then, having seen it back, did you think that was a free kick on Cork?
Well, at the time, obviously, you're so far away when you're watching the opposite side. It does look a foul the way Cork's jinked in and out of the players, but I think that's an even worse decision by the referee than the penalty. It's just, I don't like to use the word dive, maybe because that's a Burnley player and it's Jack Cork. If that was, you know, maybe like Will Zaha or something, you would be saying it's a blatant dive. But even Cork's admitted to the referee himself and after the game that it wasn't a foul. So I always look at it from, if we was QPR in that situation with that penalty and that free kick and you're 1-0 down after 15 minutes or so, you know, you're not happy. But I think, like you said, you've got to take nothing away from Gudmundsson. What a fantastic free kick that was. When you're seeing him and Brownell standing over it, for me, you're only wanting one man to take that. And with Scotty Twine looming on the bench, I think they probably knew that they're not going to be on free kicks for much longer when he gets on. And yeah, just a great view in the away end. Just watch it curl round. And I think, I might be wrong, I've watched it a couple of times back. Does it hit the goalie's towel in the right in the side net? And I think it just makes it look better. You know, you see how delighted Gudmundsson was. Ran straight to company. And I've seen the drone footage on Twitter this week of Gudmundsson scoring a similar free kick. And I think in his celebration, he was almost as surprised as anybody that it actually went in. But, you know, Gudmundsson's been a fantastic player for us. Been really unlucky with injuries. And listen, he's not the player he was. And you're not going to be as you get older in injuries. But he's such a lovely player to watch. I really enjoy watching Gudmundsson play. Really classy. We've got a lot of exciting wingers who can beat players. But he's someone who's touch, his movement, his control of the ball. Got a lovely left foot on him. So, yeah, it was fantastic to see him score that goal. And he scored two really nice goals this season. I know you was at Birmingham, so you probably had a really good view of that one. But yeah, thankfully this time it was in a winning cause. And yeah, it just set us up really well for the game then.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that we've got so much out of Gudmundsson this season. Obviously, the last few years have been very injury hit. You almost sort of write him off. You don't think of him as one of the wingers that are in the squad. You know, we've brought in some really good ones. But I think he's contributed a lot. I think what you get with Gudmundsson that you perhaps don't get with some of the other lads we've brought in is he gets stuck in. He challenges 50-50s. You see him drift in quite a lot, but some of the challenges he wins, one that springs to mind is Sunderland away. He just wins this little 50-50 in the middle of the park. The ball breaks to Zorori and then he cuts inside and bends it in the top corner. But I think that's an underrated part of his game. I think that's probably why he gets injured so much as well, is because he goes in for these 50-50s, and he's only he's not a big 6-foot centre midfielder. You know, he's a bit more frail, but it's a part of his game that definitely contributes as well.
Can I ask you a question on this then, Tom, to switch the roles around? With Dice, maybe different training methods. Do you think maybe Dice's training methods were too tough for Gudmundsson? Or like, we used to get a lot of muscle injuries and we've not seen to get anywhere near the amount of injuries this season. Really, obviously, Twine's a longer term one, but yeah, Gudmundsson's just pretty much been plain sailing and fit all the way through. So do you think he's maybe managed better this season through it, or it's just a complete coincidence?
I think there's probably a little bit of all of that in it. I don't spend every day of the week down at Gawthorpe. I don't know what the intensity of the training is like.
Oh, it's just interesting, isn't it?
But you'd say, I would say in the defence of that, you know, McNeil didn't used to get injured very much. He used to play every game, and he's the same kind of build, the same kind of position. So from what I remember with Gudmundsson, he was really unlucky in that he'd get one injury and then that'd go, and then he'd get another one. It wasn't the same injury over and over. So perhaps there is a bit of luck in it. But I think as well, now we've got a bit more depth in that position, we can afford to change and that. I think his company's managed his minutes really well as well. So there's definitely something in the management of it for me.
Yeah, definitely.
He's not playing 90 minutes every week. And maybe if he was having to, in the Prem, realistically, there was a couple of seasons where Eric Peters was third choice winger. So, you know, not being in that scenario now probably makes it a bit easier to rotate him sensibly as well. I think probably a mix of all things there. So, yeah, a cracking goal for Gudmundsson. Very, very nice to see him on the score sheet. And another player who got his second goal of the season just before half time, Ian Matson. the finish, do you know, it looks an easy finish because he's got an open goal, but the technique to it that first time from your fullback is just tremendous. And the time the goal came, I think that pretty much finished the game as a contest. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, just on a technical level, it's an absolute lovely finish. And like you said, it's an open goal, but the ball's coming at it, you know, at speed, and he's got to think about readjusting his body, and he's still got to hit it across the goalkeeper, because I think if he hits it to the near post, the goalie gets up and saves it. And it's just a lovely bit of technical ability. I don't think anybody can doubt about Mattsson is his technical ability. You know, he's a fantastic, lovely footballer to watch. Really nice talent. At times he's a little bit suspect defensively, but you know, you know, we're talking about Sean Dyche here, and you know, Vitinho's had the shot and Mattsson scored. And there's been times this season where Mattsson's crossed the ball and Vitinho's, I think it was against Swansea, where Mattsson put a great ball in and Vitinho headed it at the back post. So I know Vitinho scored two and one against Millwall. But yeah, it's really nice to see that front foot playing. And even so close to half time that we're still wanting to get that second goal. We're not just happy to knock it about, you know, and sit back and go in with a 1-0 lead. And essentially then QPR, I didn't think they were great all game, but, and you can never say never, but I felt the game was done then at 2-0. Even though they put a little bit more pressure on us in the second half, I felt overall we was really comfortable. So yeah, lovely finish. And yeah, it's just great to see the two fullbacks combining, because, you know, you look at that, it just gives you so many more attacking dimensions throughout the pitch.
Yeah, we've got goals all through the team. I mean, you think for what Taylor, Lowton, Bardsley, how many goals have they scored between them? You know, the fullbacks that we had prior.
Has Taylor even scored for Burnley? I don't think in the league. So
I'd be surprised if he'd had a shot, to be honest. Yeah, well, like you say, the amount of goals we've got in the fullback positions now compared to the last few seasons is mad. And I know we spoke then about how we're sort of controlling the game at that point, and it looked game over at 2-0. You pulled out a tremendous stat for me earlier, talking about the midfield three. And I think we saw, especially in the first half, that was what was giving us control of the game, the interchange of positions and the passing. And hit us with that stat, because it was one stat man Dave would have been pleased with.
Oh, it's all right, Tom. I thought you was going to use it. But I think so when Cork, Cullen and Brown will have started, we've not lost a game. Obviously our two losses, Watford away and Cork didn't start that one. We started Bastion. I think that experiment won't start again if Cork's fit. And then obviously Sheffield United, Browner was suspended, so we didn't play. And those three in midfield, they're absolutely superb. I just love watching them play. It's an absolute. I think at the start of the season it was a little bit static at times. You know, maybe while we're getting used to each other, but recently it's been fantastic to watch. They're so fluid, comfortable in possession, and that midfield three, there's not a better one in the Championship. I think when they're playing well, nobody can touch them. And what I really like about all three, and even Cullen, who's a little bit, you know, more diminutive, you know, they still really get stuck into and do the dog work. It's not like they're just tidy passers and they don't do the hard yards. So for me, I think Zerui, Teller, you know, get the headlines, Benson obviously now, but I think consistently that midfield three, Cork, Cullen and Brownell, sets up a lot of our wins. And you know, it's just been great to see Cork, you know, play week in, week out. And I know the Premier League's a different level and it's a different beast, but it does make you wonder why you played so few games last season. Hopefully the viewers enjoy that stat anyway. I just thought it off the top of my head. There's no research into that one. It's just all right. It just could just come to me.
No, I didn't. But if I had a fiver for the amount of research I do for this podcast, then I'd be very sure it comes across. So just before we go on to the third goal as well, you mentioned there that Brownhill, Cork and Cullen Actis, the best in the league. But we've touched on the fact that Chirlinoff and Twine are coming back into the picture now. They've both got some minutes at the end of the game. What do you think? Do you see either of them taking a claim to start? I thought before he got injured, Chirlinoff looked more impressive than Zerui and Benson to start with. And obviously Twine, we paid a lot of money for him. He was best player in League One last year. The obvious place to play him is where Brownhill's playing currently. Do you see either of them, you know, staking a claim for that first team place or getting in there in the near future?
Yeah, I don't see why not. You know, we need, you've got the Christmas period coming up, haven't we, with that Man United game in between. You know, it's going to be hard. I think Twine's ideal position will be where Brownhill playing. He's a very different type of number 10. you know, there's still games this season where you think, yeah, a Twine-type player would help us because teams are still going to come to 10 men and sit behind the ball a lot. And, you know, QPR and Blackburn, our last two opponents, have tried to play out a little bit, which just isn't the way to go against us. If you try and do that, we'll absolutely kill you. I don't know what to expect with Middlesbrough and Carrick, but yeah, so I don't see why they can't stake claims in the team. Like I said, Chirlinoff to me looks a real talent, actually. He's a bit stronger than the other wingers we've got, a bit more direct, but he's still very raw, is what I would say, like some of our other players. But you look at that bench on Sunday, Tom, and that's without Zaruri. And, you know, we've got a really deep squad and we've got so many options to bring off the bench to rest and to rotate. I don't think it'll be in the next two or three games at them to a start, but I think, you know, maybe towards January time, they'll definitely start staking a place in the team. And I'm pretty sure I'd be surprised if we don't add another striker to in January. I think Dervisoglu will go back to Brentford and then maybe elsewhere from what I read. I know Fenerbahce are interested. So I think we'll add another quality striker. And then, you know, the options we've got and the riches, you know, like you said, we've gone from having Peter's third choice winger to having so many of these lads that we can choose and select and rotate, maybe depending on opponent too. And when you've got someone like Benson coming off the bench when you're 3-0 up, that's actually frightening. Imagine being an opposite fan thinking, bloody hell, we're 3-0 down, we've got Benson running at us. So yeah, it's really exciting moving forward.
Yeah, I mentioned that on Twitter and someone replied to me and said, it's a bit like when we play Man City and they take like Bernardo Silva off and bring Kevin De Bruyne on. This just isn't fair. Must be our QPR fans felt when they saw him coming on.
Yeah.
So last thing, probably there's not a lot to say, I don't think, really, about the game because we were just so dominant and so comfortable. It was one before the game you thought it might be a bit up in the air with them having a new manager and the fact we'd had a break, but we picked up where we left off. I just wanted to touch on Nathan Teller's goal. Good to see him back among the goals. We've been a little bit without. The thing that really springs to mind for me, obviously it's a really good finish, similar to Matson, you know, tight angle, and he takes it really well. But did you see after he scored the sort of pit is there, like in front of him?
That big hole.
Yeah, what's that about?
Almost seemed like there was like some cover and it wasn't there, or it wasn't covering it if you watch it back. And yeah, like he's done, to be fair to him, he's done very well to avoid that. If that's, you know, Ashley Barnes who can't move too well these days, he's going straight down it, isn't he? Yeah. It's like something I imagine from Takeshi's Castle where you've got to like avoid it and jump over it. But yeah, it was a great finish, weren't it? I know Jimmy Dunn, ex-Burnley player, you know, to think that Jimmy Dunn and Kev Long were starting for us in the Prem during the start of that last lockdown with Bardsley right back and Peter left back, Jesus. And yeah, you know, that's what Teller is. He plays on the shoulder. He can be a tad frustrating at times, Teller, I find, with his decision-making a little bit. You can tell why Southampton's letting him out on loan, but I think Teller's at his best when he's instinctive, when he doesn't have to think about it. Like, you're seeing that chance he has after 30 seconds because he's got all the time in the world. He just sits it straight back at the keeper. But that one, he's gambled, read it, and the finish is absolutely superb. I don't know how he's really got it in from that angle. And, you know, and that makes a really enjoyable 20, 25 minutes then where you can just have a little sing-song, enjoy the game. And I know you said the game was comfortable, but I think we actually managed it better, Tom. I think there's times this season when we've been winning and we've still been playing like gung-ho, silly, bombing forward as fast as we can. And I think there was time I didn't notice that Matson wasn't overlapping as much at 2-0. I don't know if that shows on the telly quite the same, but he was just holding back a little bit. And I'm more than happy with that. And like I said, I think if we just get that little bit of game management as well, I think we'll be a really difficult side to beat. So yeah, and it was just like you said, it was just after the England game, after not playing for so long, it was just a really nice, you know, way back. And I never felt too high after the game. I wasn't like driving home, like, oh, absolutely buzzing. It just felt like a real good, satisfying job done. Do you mean you've just done a good job, you know, good day of work and you're happy with what you've done and you can enjoy your tea? That's what it felt like, really.
Yeah. It was, I think there's a certain level of expectation now that we maybe didn't have earlier in the season, but we are rising up the expectation as well. We just look so good at the minute. It's really hard to see us finishing outside the top two. I don't know if you saw, Natalie did a piece with Sky recently.
It was very good. It was excellent.
Yeah, she came across very well, I thought. They were talking there, and at the end they asked all the fans around the table. So there was It was Burnley and Sheffield United, Watford, and then somehow a Blackburn fan had sneaked in there. I don't know what he was doing at a promotion.
Why has a Blackburn fan got on that table? Jesus. They're only going one way.
But a lot of the other clubs fans there seem to think that we'd be dropping out of the top two, and I just think they can't. I think they must have only watched the Sheffield United game in the last few weeks, because that aside, we're looking imperious at the minute. The Watford fan actually said that he thought they'd go above us. When he said that, they were 8 points behind us, and we've played one game since, and they're now 10 points behind us. So I'd be very surprised at this juncture. But as you say,
yeah,
it just feels routine at the minute. It just feels like we're sort of picking these wins up without getting out of third gear.
You know, you never know with football. Funny things happen. You know, we could get a real spade of injuries, but you know, you look at it, and Zaruri, who's a lad who's probably been in the last few weeks, our star player, wasn't even in the squad, and we didn't miss him at all. And I think that just tells you about the depth we've got. People are going to criticise me for this, and I know, and I think Charlotte will criticise me. I know Barnes did very well against Blackburn, but I think when Rodriguez doesn't play, I think we do miss him a lot, even though he's just still got that class and guile up front. But, you know, yeah, we're just looking just really imperious. And I think, you know, at the start of the season, Tom, there wasn't, you know, you was going into games kind of enjoying the football, but we wasn't winning and it was frustrating. Where now there is just like, you can see we've almost learned how to win. And yeah, no, we're just in our stride really well. Going back to a game, I don't know if you went to it. I think you went to it, but that Coventry away, where, you know, you're not, like, you've seen Coventry on a decent run at the moment. And then, you know, we was 1-0 up, and that was on the back of a lot of 1-1 draws and a lot of late goals conceded, and we've hung on a little bit, and that seemed to give us the springboard. And I think we've won like 8 out of 9 or 7 out of 8 only that blip against Sheffield. And it's, like I said, it's just, you know, you've really got that excitement feeling to go to games, knowing that you're going to watch a team who, for one, gives everything. That's really important. But you also play really nice football. And one of my concerns was when we're signing all these new lads left, right and centre is how they would gel. And you can tell there's a real camaraderie and team spirit at the moment, and that's as pleasing as anything else.
Yeah, definitely. There was an interview with Bettino on the club channels the other day, and he was talking about the camaraderie and the spirit, and that was something that Sean Dyche was brilliant at harnessing. And you thought, you know, with a lot of new arrivals and the fact that they've been pulled from all four corners of the globe, that was going to be quite hard to replicate. But it does seem to be there. And obviously, when you're playing in a good team and a winning team, that helps as well. So
it does. Yeah. It does, yeah.
It's looking good. It's looking good at the minute, touch wood.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So that brings us nicely on to, hopefully, another enjoyable Saturday. We're up against Middlesbrough this Saturday. Now managed by, not by Chris Wilder anymore, by Michael Carrick. It's quite an interesting, similar kind of appointment to ours, really. Sort of a left field choice, a former player, sort of working his way up. And they seem to be in better form since he's taken over. It's going to be a difficult game. Before we go into that in more detail, as part of the previous show, as you know, we have a quiz question. And it was quite a difficult one in the last one. So way back in 1946-47, on the way to reaching the FA Cup final, Burnley, then of the second division, beat three top-flight opponents, Aston Villa, Middlesbrough and Liverpool. However, since then, Burnley have only beaten six top-flight teams in the FA Cup whilst we were out of the top flight. So, obviously, the situation we're in now. And Dave asked you, how many of those teams could you name? Looking at the list, I went to four of these games, and I probably couldn't have told you all four. Did you have any ideas, Rich? How many did you get out of six?
Oh, God, I'd actually need time to digest it and probably write it down. Is I don't know. Tottenham won?
Nah, League Cup, I think.
That was in the League Cup. Yeah, I'm out to think about that. Oh, Liverpool, of course. Jimmy Traore.
That's the classic one. Yeah.
That was the one thing I remember from that game is how bad the pitch was compared to what you see now. Because obviously it'd have been in January, I presume, so a third round game. God, that's a hard question. You know, I could start randomly naming teams and boring everyone, but no, the only one I actually properly know without really thinking about it would be Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool. One that jumped out for me was Derby away in 2000 because I was a schoolboy in Derby then, getting mercilessly teased the whole build up to that game that we were going to get battered. We won 1-0. Andy Cook scored, and it was a very enjoyable Monday in school after that. So that one sticks in my mind. The others that was in 99. The others, as I say, Birmingham in 1979, Stoke in 1980. Bit too young for either of those. Fulham in 2003. I think you remember that one. We drew 1-1. I think that was at Loftus Road, actually, when Fulham were playing there. 1-3-0. I remember Drissa Diallo scored. And everyone had those. Do you remember Facundo Sava had that little mask?
Yeah, that mask.
I don't remember the game, but I do remember Facundo Sava. Yeah.
Remember everyone had those masks because he was playing for Fulham. 3-0 that was. And then the other one was West Brom, 2009. That was in the...
I went to that too.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the Saturday after we lost to Tottenham.
Yeah, I think if memory serves, I think we drew at the Hawthorns and we beat them at the Turf in a replay. And I think I only went to one at the Hawthorns. Yeah, Graham Alexander scored a penalty, and then Mark Patson scored right near the end, and we beat him in a replay. Well, I didn't go to the replay. Okay. Stephen Thompson scored it. Well, there you go. Those are the answers. I don't think we had anyone who got all six. Fair play to you if you did, or I think probably. 3 or 4 is a good pass score on that one. Hopefully something a little bit easier at the end of this one. We'll see. So, Middlesbrough, as I say, and let me introduce Statman Dave, the star of the preview show, and he's going to give you a rundown now of the Championship head-to-head record between Birmingham and Middlesbrough.
Saturday's match marks the midpoint of the current league season, as we will have played exactly half of our 46 games by 5 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. We've played all of the other 22 teams once, and so Middlesbrough are the only team we haven't faced yet in 2022-23. Burnley and Borough have spent 30 league seasons together in the same division before the current campaign. Most of those, 19, were in the top flight, but we're going to take a closer look at the 11 previous second-tier meetings at Turf Moor. There were two second-tier matches at Turf Moor between the two teams just after the turn of the 20th century. Burnley won 2-0 in September 1900, and then we came from behind twice to draw 2-2 in November 1901. We then jumped forward to the 1970s, and there was an emphatic 5-2 home win in November 1971, which the Burnley Express described as a tonic win at the right time. Leighton James scored two of Burnley's knapphand of goals in that match. The following season saw the two teams play out a goalless draw in September 1972, a game which captain Martin Dobson missed through injury. There was just one second-tier meeting at Turf Moor during the 1980s, and that was another draw in January 1983. Derek Scott put the Clarets ahead just before the break, but Dave Shearer scored an equaliser past Billy O'Rourke in the second half to make it 1-1. The next match on our list was the only one for the 1990s, and that resulted in a heavy 3-0 home defeat as John Hendry netted a hat-trick for Brian Robson's side. Burnley's Wayne Dowell was also sent off just after the break in that game for his second yellow card, both for fouls on Borough's Alan Moore. The remaining five matches on our list have all taken place since 2011. Jay Rodriguez, Wade Elliott and Michael Duff helped Burnley to a 3-1 win in April 2011. But the Clarets have failed to win any of the most recent four second-tier home games against Middlesbrough since then. As well as a 2-0 Burnley defeat in September 2011, the two teams played out another goalless draw in February 2013, and the visitors came away with all 3 points with a 1-0 win in April 2014 through Jacob Butterfield, despite going down to 10 men with the late dismissal of Daniel Ayala. There's one more match we haven't mentioned the result of, but we'll come to that very shortly when we look back at our memory match feature. Overall, Burnley have won 3, drawn 5 and lost 3 of our previous 11 second-tier home games against Middlesbrough. And we know we're going to be in for another tough test this weekend.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Dave. Moving on then to the play for both section. A bit larger than than some of the other ones we've had, and some quite surprising, interesting names on this one as well. Rich, who springs out to you when you look at that list?
Well, one current player is Connor Roberts. I didn't know he played for Middlesbrough until Dave sent it in. I think he played one game on loan for Swansea. I presume Swansea was in the Prem. But yeah, there's only one man I'm going to say there, and that's Andre Amigou, our BK, the man, the myth, the legend. And he put in one of the all-time great Premier League performances when we beat Birmingham at home, when he scored a goal rampaging from midfield. But yeah, there's a few good ones in the Tom. So, but yeah, he's my standout pick.
Yeah, that backflip as well, tremendous.
Yeah, yeah.
The one for me, I thought you were going to say Ben Gibson, actually, in his Middlesbrough.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably my greatest ever comment on the podcast, isn't it? Yeah. So.
Try and forget about Ben Gibson if we can.
Yeah, to be fair, I forgot about him. Yeah,
I think the two that really stand out for me as being sort of big players at both clubs, Gary Parkinson, a lot of games for both teams. Obviously, well thought of and well remembered even now by both sets of fans. And Andy Payton, perhaps not as much of a Middlesbrough legend, but certainly at Burnley, you know, someone that's thought of fondly by everybody and remembered by everybody. But the personal one for me was Marlon Beresford, because I can remember as a kid, or probably would have been about 7 or 8, Walsall away, and this was back in the days before the internet, and if we wanted to get news from where we were in Derby about Burnley, we'd have to ring up Club Call and pay £2 a minute. Didn't even get the local papers, of course, and so we rocked up to the Mascot expecting to see Marlon Beresford in nets, and it was only then that we found out that he'd been sold to Middlesbrough. And as a kid, I was absolutely heartbroken by that. Chris Wood's warming up. Where's Marlon? Oh, he's gone. So, yeah. So when I think of Middlesbrough, that's one that sticks in my mind, actually. Marlon Beresford has been spirited away. But there you go. Yes, quite a few recently who've not really pulled up any trees for either. Nathaniel Chalabar, Patrick Bamford.
Yellow Vossen.
God, yeah. That's he's one that you'd definitely forget if it wasn't on that list.
Yeah.
Yeah, some unusual ones in recent times. There you go. So moving on then to a memory match. I think this is a game that everybody will remember very well. Take it away, Dave.
We could have chosen one of Burnley's 3 second-tier home wins for our memory match this week, but instead we've chosen a draw, but one which felt very much like a win. The match in question took place in April 2016. Despite Burnley remaining unbeaten during the second half of the season following a heavy Boxing Day defeat at Hull City, our excellent run appeared to be in jeopardy when the league leaders and one of two main promotion rivals rocked up to Turf Moor for a memorable Tuesday night game under the Turf Moor floodlights. After a goalless first half, we knew that it just had to be Jordan Rhodes who broke the deadlock to put Middlesbrough into the lead with just 20 minutes left to play. However, we were relentless that season, and in the second minute of added time, following Matt Taylor's corner, Michael Keane was in the right place to somehow force a shot in for an equaliser. That goal led to a mass celebration on the pitch and unleashed an incredible roar from the Turf Moor faithful, who by now had realised that this team were special and never knew when they were beaten. After the match, Sean Dyche said, "I'm really pleased with the whole group tonight for the mentality. That's an important game. You go 1-0 down, that can defuel you. Not for us. We just kept on, and eventually they cracked." It all ended okay, but a different result that night might have changed the course of the season, with Borough and Brighton so strong in the latter stages of the campaign. But Burnley were made of sterner stuff and went on to be crowned champions, which meant another promotion back to the promised land of the Premier League.
Thanks very much, Dave. Yeah, that was one of those atmospheres that you never forget when that equaliser went in from Michael Keane.
I've got a good story on that, Tom, that game. So I was working in London at the time, in my first year as a teacher. And they let me finish an hour early. so I could go, so I could go to the game. So about, and I was working in East London, so a long way away. Drove from East London for the game, and then straight back that night. Got home at about, because there was roadworks on the M6 and the M1. Got home at about 5 o'clock, and 2 hours sleep, and I was back up for work in the morning. So the turf was literally rocking when that key and goal went in. So yeah, really, really special. Even though I was tired the next day, but really special game that. And I think if we lost that game, I don't think we'd have gone up top two. So yeah, you know, a wonderful memory. Yeah.
Yeah, I think people knew that as well. When it had gone in, we were taking a big stride towards automatic promotion. Yeah. So yeah, that's a great one to be able to draw on. Moving on then to the opposition view. We'd like to hear what the opposition are thinking. I think it'd be a very interesting one, actually, especially for Finsbury with how much things have changed since Michael Carrick came in. I'm very interested to see what his teams play like. And hopefully we'll get a bit of an insight now from the Borough Breakdown podcast.
Hello guys, Johnny here from the Borough Breakdown podcast. I'm here to give you a Middlesbrough perspective of our game on Saturday at Turf Moor, and league leaders Burnley are absolutely flying, but Borough are flying as well with 4 wins in the last 5 games under Michael Carrick. And it, to be honest, since the managerial change from Wilder to Carrick, Borough have become a much more stable team. Carrick's came in, he showed his good personal skills of understanding the players on and off the pitch. He's got good judgment and not trying to give these players too much analysis paralysis, and you can see that on the pitch. The players are going there with confidence and knowing exactly what they need to do to try and get a result, and that shows with tactical flexibility as well, because Borough have been able to adjust the way the player ever so slightly for each team. But the one principle from Michael Carrick so far is always attack the space, and that's what I think Borough will try and aim up Burnley at the weekend. You know, Vincent Kompany, he likes to have that possession based football and create quite a wide pitch. And if the players do give it away, I think that's how Borough will strike if we do get a result on Saturday. But in terms of our season so far, Chris Wilder couldn't get us going. And ever since that Burnley link, things just haven't been the same. And he left the building knowing that he could have been getting the bottom of the job, but didn't get it in the end. But in terms of Carrick and what he's done differently, he's moved us to a back four. We're playing a 4-2-3-1 at the moment. He's introduced Hayden Hackney from the academy into that centre defensive midfield role with Johnny Howson. He's absolutely flourished. He's a really good ball carrier and likes to get Borough on the front foot and getting us playing. But players to look out for, apart from Hayden Hackney, Ryan Giles on that left-hand side, Isaiah Jones on the right, Giles is more of a left-back, Jones is more of a right-winger. Ryan McGree had a really good World Cup with Australia, and he's playing that left attacker midfield role. But one player I think you should look out for is Chuba Akpom. 9 goals this season for Borough, top goal scorer in the Championship, and he came from absolutely out the cold. He was at in Greece last year, and he's came back and he absolutely flourished under Michael Carrick. But it's going to be a really difficult game for us. You know, we're going to try and probably sit in. We'll try and get you on the break. But we do like to play a bit of possession football ourselves. I feel like if we get our foothold in the game, we can make things really difficult for Burnley. You guys having Cullen suspended is a big, big win for us, because I think Cullen for you guys has been absolutely tremendous this season. But, I mean, we have to worry about Nathan Teller, Goodmanson, Rodriguez, Mattson Brownhill. You know, it's going to be a really difficult test for us. But I'm going to go in there. I think we're going to draw 1-1, and hopefully we can maybe sneak something as well and make it 4 wins on the spin away from home. But, guys, thank you very much for having me on. All the best for the rest of the season. I'm a big fan of Vincent Kompany because I do follow Anderlecht as well, and he did really well with us last year. But hopefully we can try and snatch something at the weekend instead. But guys, thank you very much for having me on.
There we go. Thank you very much to the Borough Breakdown podcast for that. Moving on to the referee. And Dave's written a lovely little blurb here. And I'm choosing to read this in maybe a less cynical tone than intended. But Dave has pointed out that taking charge of Saturday's match is a referee who is based in Stanley in County Durham. So we're talking the North East. I don't want to come across like an Arsenal fan, but an interesting coincidence maybe, although he does go on to say that David Webb, who was Saturday's ref, was a Sunderland fan as a youngster, so maybe actually it'll benefit us. He's been a Football League referee since 2008. In terms of past Burnley games, he's taken charge of 8 before this weekend, and 5 of those ended in victory for the Clarets. In his 4 previous matches at Turf Moor, there have been 3 Burnley wins and a draw, which was earlier this season, as he was the man in the middle when we drew 1-1 against Stoke City in October. I think that was the game before the Coventry game that we were speaking about earlier. David Webb hasn't shown any red cards in any of his previous Burnley matches, and his only red cards in other matches so far this season were all shown in an eventful last 15 minutes in the match at Bramall Lane between Sheffield United and Blackpool in October. Four players received their marching orders, one from Sheffield United and three from Blackpool, in a match which eventually finished 3-3. So he's not averse to giving the teams who were in the top two a bit of a helping hand, so hopefully that'll come in handy on Saturday. So coming on to Saturday then, as I said earlier, I don't know that much really of what to expect from Middlesbrough. Obviously, they've shot up the table a bit since Chris Wilder left. From what I hear, they were a little bit unlucky to be where they were under Wilder, and perhaps they're just getting a bit more of the rubber of the green now. Have you seen much of them, Rich? What are you expecting? What are you thinking for Saturday?
No, in terms of playing style, I'm not 100% sure. You'd have to remark. I don't want to be stereotypical, so I do apologise to any Middlesbrough fans listening, but I would have thought they'd have played quite nice football under Carrick, you know, a new manager. Younger managers don't want to play as direct. And I'm just looking at some of the stats there, and they are top of the form table. You know, they're above us for the last five games, and I think they've only lost like one in the last seven. So I expect it to be a really tough and challenging game. I think with the squad they've got, I expect Middlesbrough, I'm not saying they will get in the playoffs because they've got a lot of catching up to do, but I expect they'll, you know, as you said, Tom, they will start climbing the table towards the playoffs. So I expect a tougher game than QPR, put it that way. But at the same time, the way we're playing, we shouldn't fear anybody. You know, I do think we're the best side in the division. And expect, you know, our record at Turf Moor recently has been fantastic. Not lost there at home this season. So you've got to fancy us having you. So, yeah.
Yeah, I must say I'm feeling pretty confident in general at the minute. I'm sure at one point my bubble's going to get burst in a big way, but especially at home at the minute, we're looking pretty unbeatable. What would you pick in terms of the team? Do you make any changes from QPR? Are you just freshening things up? Does Benson come back in? Well, are you still Twine or chill enough?
Well, we was really crazy in Goodmanson at the start of the podcast, and rightly so, but I think at home, I'd like to see Benson starting, if I'm being honest. It's a real, real conundrum, isn't it, with Benson? You know, because he's been so fantastic off the bench. But then you've seen him when he started at Sheffield United. He scored, well, definitely scored one, maybe scored two with a lucky deflection. And you kind of think you might, against a better side, you might want to go from it from the start. But if you played the same team and brought Benson off the bench, it wouldn't, I'd be quite happy with that. I don't think Twine and Chirlinov are quite ready for a start as of yet, but I think that'll be the only decision company will have to make is as soon as he's starting Goodmanson's position, unless there's been any other injuries that we don't know about. I thought company would have had his press conference today, as it's a Thursday, but I don't know if he's had a bit of time off or whatever, so I presume his press conference will be tomorrow, so I'll have a bit of an update if there's been any injuries. But no, yeah, for me, I'd pick Benson, but at the same time, I wouldn't be too despondent if Goodmanson was starting.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of England at the World Cup. It's like there's so many good options in those positions that he starts. I don't think there's a massive amount between them. I think you're happy to see whoever, and you know that you've got brilliant options to bring off the bench if you need him. So, yeah, I'm of the same mind there. I'm happy with whoever he starts, and it wouldn't surprise me to see an unchanged team after how well we played on Saturday, on Sunday.
One player we've not mentioned too, who sounds like he's very close to fitness, is Westwood, and I don't think you can underestimate. You know, he's still a very good player, Westwood, and especially at this level. And I think he'll quite enjoy playing under company and not just having to do them channel balls, which he was clearly instructed to do time after time. And I think we have seen when one of Cork or Cullen goes out. I do like Bastion. I think he's a good player, but I think he lacks a little bit of physicality in that area. And then when Brownhill goes back there, you lose a lot of what he's been doing well this season. So I think that's another player who I just forgot to mention. It's just come to my mind at the start of just now. So, yeah, that squad's looking really good.
Yeah, I think Westwood's skill set is really going to suit the way we're playing at the minute.
Definitely.
Kind of players ping it around. And like you said, with Cork and Cullen, just busy and shuttling and disrupting. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him in this team as well. So before we leave you for this week, we've got one more entry from the Bank of Dave. And that is Natalie always refers to it as the miscellaneous stat of the week, which I always thought was a very catchy title. So over to Dave with this week's miscellaneous stat of the week.
Burnley remain unbeaten in the league at Turf Moor this season, with 7 wins and 4 draws in Championship home games since Vincent Kompany took over in the summer. That run actually stretches to 24 unbeaten home games in the Championship when you include the second half of the 2015-16 season. And going back a little bit further, Burnley have only lost 4 of the last 61 Championship matches which have taken place at Turf Moor since April 1, 2013. This extended period takes into account the last month of Sean Dyche's first season in charge, as well as the whole of the 2013-14 and 2015-16 campaigns, in addition to the first half of the current season.
There we go. I've been really enjoying hearing these stats about how good we are in the Championship. It's not very often you put like 2 or 3 promotion seasons back to back, so these stats are coming out really nice at the minute, and obviously we've been so good this season as well. And it leads us nicely onto the quiz question. There's no FPL this week, obviously, with the Premier League not being back, but listen out for that soon. So this week's quiz question, we've already mentioned in our stat of the week that Burnley are unbeaten in 11 league games at Turf Moor so far this season, as well as our last 13 Championship home games of 2015-16. But can you name the last 4 clubs to beat Burnley in a Championship match at Turf Moor? We're going back some way, I'd say, for that. I don't want to give any clues or anything, but that's not a lot easier than last week's, and I struggled with last week's. You can get in touch with us the usual ways. If you're going to tweet us, then do please DM rather than sending a tweet, just because obviously then other people can't see your answers. DM us or email us, and we will give you the answer to that on the preview show for, I think we should be, time permitting, we should be able to get one out for the Manchester United game on Wednesday. Or at least we'll do an analysis, and if we don't have the full preview, then maybe we can roll that over to for the next league game. Thank you very much. Have you got any closing thoughts, Rich? In fact, we'd best do a prediction, because I noticed actually Statman Dave has supplied us with his own prediction this week. He has gone for a 2-1 win, and he's gone for Jay Rodriguez and Nathan Teller as goal scorers. What about yourself, Rich? Are you optimistic, confident?
Yeah, I'm confident. Yeah, I'm going to go 3-1. You know, I just think we're just scoring at the moment. We look really good. So 3-1. I'll go Brownhill. He's not got one in a while. I'm going to go Benson. I'll get one off the bench. Off from the start, maybe, because I said he will start. And yeah, I think Jay's due a goal as well. I think we're going to get a penalty. So 3-1.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, like you say, I think we're the top scorers in the Football League now, or the top scorers in England. So like you say, every game you're rocking up and expecting some goals. So I could see it being another 3. Do you know what? Let's go mad. Let's go 4-0.
Nice.
4-0.
Tom, you are in a good mood. Nearly Christmas.
I enjoyed that GTR game, can't you?
Yeah.
4-0. Rodriguez hat-trick. How about that? Rodriguez hat-trick, 4-0. Nice. And then Barnes to come on and just put one in off his arse as well. Lovely. Well, let's hope that comes to pass. Don't forget as well, you can always get in touch with us with your predictions. Same place at another podcast. And that is it for this week. Thank you very much to Rich for joining me. Thank you very much to the Borough Breakdown podcast. Thank you very much to Statman Dave. Thank you very much to producer Matt for knitting it all together. And thank you very much for listening at home. I've been Tom Wicker, and this has been the None and Ever podcast.
The None and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonadnever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are, as ever, proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.